Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We are going to take some votes here today on three bills, starting with Senate Bill 1528. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1528. Before we go to votes, if you could just give us a quick review. And Kyle, you have some new official numbers.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I was just going to, before Kyle gets into those numbers, I just wanted to touch base on kind of some of the technical issues related to revenue impact statements. Just a reminder for the committee and anybody listening that, because we're in an odd position now with the last revenue forecast and the federal changes coming between them, and the federal impacts aren't incorporated in the official Oregon revenue forecast. That won't happen until next week. So as a frame of reference, every revenue impact statement that LRO puts out is a change from a baseline number. So it's always a change from something. And the question is, what is the something? And that something is always the most recent formal economic and revenue forecast put out by the state economist. And in this case, that is the December 1 forecast. And where we're in now, in some of the policies in here are responding to the federal legislation. So our baseline perspective for these numbers is a combination of the December 1 forecast and the impacts of the federal law changes. And those federal law changes aren't in that base forecast. So a couple of the policies that are being adopted can be viewed not as raising revenue per se, but as preventing a revenue loss. So there is a different kind of perspective that it's important to keep in mind as you're talking with folks, because it can be argued either way with respect to that. Mm-hmm. And what we're mainly talking about here for 1528, and I'll get to 1529 when the committee gets to that bill, but for 1528, you have a disconnect from the federal pass-through deduction. And so the revenue loss under current law, which is going to be in the next forecast because that's related to taxable income. So those revenues are affecting the state. That's not something you have to tie to. That's an automatic flow through. So the revenue impact numbers Kyle is going to go through is a mix of deviations from the December 1 forecast and this perspective on the federal law change, which can be viewed as, again, not necessarily raising revenue per se, but preventing a loss. So in that sense, they kind of fit together that way. And I just wanted to highlight that because that's a little bit different from the normal revenue impact statements that we have because of the timing of the federal legislation and the state forecasts.
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective. Okay, Kyle.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So up in Olmsted, we have 1528, the dash 5, and the dash 8. The dash 5 is, I've walked through that with this, with the committee already, so I would just start with the dash 8 for now, and then if we want to circle back for any compare or contrast, can certainly do that. But so I put together the revenue table that this committee has seen for the previous amendments, and this one again is the 1528-8 revenue table, and it contains the provisions in the bill along with the individual impacts and those summed up that you would see as the total revenue impact in the revenue impact statement. But so the dash 8, again, it begins with that full disconnect from the federal pass-through deduction that was put in place. Mm-hmm. So Oregon's disconnecting from that, and then the next component is limiting the Oregon pass-through rates to the first $250,000 of the non-passive income. So that's an Oregon provision, and then also adding in sole proprietorships to then be able to take those reduced rates up to the $250,000. And then the third component, or the third change to Oregon's pass-through rates, is disallowing the specific NAICS codes 54 and 62. So those changes are consistent with what the committee has already heard in the dash 5. There's also the deviation with the dash 8 is, rather than reducing the tax rates, the first two Oregon tax rates of 5% and 7%, it's increasing Oregon's personal exemption by right about $50 in today's dollars. So we had the dash 7 amendment yesterday, that had a lot of issue on taking into account the way the personal exemption is structured in statute is it's a dollar amount back in time, and then it's grown forward using the CPI. So we have that number corrected now, but in a general sense, you're looking at right about $50 in 2018 would be the increase in the personal exemption credit. Mm-hmm. So the change there is where you were looking at with a rate reduction of starting at about $200 million per year, the personal exemption credit would put you in about $150 million revenue loss. So there's a little difference there. Again, you have the Oregon Opportunity Grant credit. That's unchanged. That's in there. So really that only changes just the rates instead of rates using the personal exemption credit. And that gets you to biennial figures of, again, as credit as Chris just described, working on current law, which incorporates the changes at the federal level, of a revenue lift in that way of $81 million in 2017-18, 136 in 1921, and 170 in 2021-23. Mm-hmm. But again, those are taken into account. The automatic connecting definition of federal taxable income.
Right, and as Chris pointed out, because of the timing here, because of current law that we are connected, these aren't so much revenue gains as they're preventing losses from the federal tax law. One point just to elaborate, I think we talked about this the other day, but on the personal tax credit increase, we're going from 200 to 250.
Yes, Mr. Chair, yeah, we are.
So for a family of four, they would have current law where they would have $800 off of their tax bill, and now they will have $1,000 off the tax bill, so they will benefit by $200.
Yes, Mr. Chair, yeah, the two limits are if you have income for a single filer of $100,000, then the personal exemption credit is not available to you, or over $200,000. So as long as you're beneath those two thresholds, yeah, exactly that. And there are additional exemption credits you can get for child with a disability and such as well. So you can even get a little bit more of a lift depending upon the particulars of the return.
And for me, that makes a little more sense. These are actually larger tax breaks than the previous bracket reductions because they're targeted more for middle income earners and below. So these are actually larger tax breaks for families under $200,000. So, any questions of Kyle? Sarah Boquist, I don't know where your head's at, I should say. If you're willing to move the Dash 8s to Senate Bill.
Sure, I do not want to be an obstacle. I've not seen the Dash 8s whatsoever. I left here at 6 o'clock last night, was assured that it was either the 5s or the 7s, but if you want a motion to move the Dash 8s into 1528, I'm happy to have just made that motion.
Well, we went through the Dash 8s yesterday in committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the Dash 8 is just the Dash 7 with that correction for the timing of the CPI adjustment. So other than that, it's the same thing, just adjusted to correct, I guess, the actual policy request.
Okay, so this is
it. So, Mr. Chair, we didn't go through it when I left at 6 o'clock last night, but if you want to move the Dash 8s, I've made the motion.
Senator Boquist moves adoption of the Dash 8 to Senate Bill 1528. Is there discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the Dash 8s are adopted. Senator Boquist?
I don't want to be an obstacle, so therefore, Mr. Chair, I will move, SB 1528 with the Dash 8 be adopted, and then we'll discuss it.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 1528 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Boquist.
Just for the record, I'm a no vote. I actually think we should be doing some version of 1529 after the revenue forecast, and then we should have the discussion on this one. I have no idea where my caucus is on this particular issue. There are good things in 1528. There are bad things in 1528. and I'm puzzled why we're racing forward without a revenue forecast and deal. But again, as you and I have talked, a no vote by us doesn't mean we're going to have a fight amongst ourselves.
Further discussion? Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the tax policy has gotten so complicated because I don't think anybody can honestly say they absolutely know the implications of the new federal tax policy. And with the counsel that I've sought out, I'm not coming up with the same thing as counsel here. And so because I have my findings are significantly different than the findings of the states, I'm not comfortable. And it has nothing to do with the policy. I'm in agreements with Senator Boquist that if we have to make some adjustments because of the federal tax policy, I'm willing to make those adjustments. However, I don't think we know what adjustments we need to make yet. So in good conscience, I cannot support this.
Okay. Respect both of those comments from both of you gentlemen. I would just say, Senator Boquist, I wish we had the luxury of waiting longer after the forecast to deal with these, but if we wait until after the forecast, that gets us into the third week, that gets it on the floor at the end of the third week, and all of a sudden we're running out of time, and the last thing we can do is not take action on either of these two bills. And so that's the reason for moving swiftly on these, if that's what you want to call it. We've actually been working on these since the Paul Warner era in November. He was working on these. And I do believe this short session is very appropriate to take action on changes that Congress makes to our tax code. Congress changes the tax code every year, sometimes a lot, sometimes not. This time it was a lot, and it's responsible for our state to say, look, when Congress does something that could potentially harm our state, we have to respond. And I think this one tax break selects a small group, whereas our adjustment selects a large group and puts some money in the pockets of middle-income Oregonians. It adds small businesses to our business tax relief plan, and it helps itemizers if they need help getting outside and beyond that new limit on local taxes. So it feels like a very responsible move for our state in the wake of these changes. So, but I do appreciate your opinions, and I appreciate your work before this session, Senator Boquist, thinking through some of these things. Senator Buckley.
Perfect timing.
Great. Just like that, I guess we just respectfully disagree, and I am still stand ready. I guess I'm willing to. I rarely gamble. I gamble with my life for too many decades, but I'm perfectly willing to gamble. We're going to see this a second time. But having said that, looking in the audience out here, I see, and looking to my left, I think some of us are quite familiar with being here at 8:30 or night on evening still working on policy, and after the revenue forecast and after the House has its day in infamy and this comes back, I am perfectly happy working till 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, 7 days a week to the end of this session to get it right. And so I look forward to that opportunity, and you buy dinner, not me.
Sounds like a deal. All right, anything else? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bertschinger.
No.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Senator Boquist.
No, thank you.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes aye. The measure passes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. I'll be the carrier. I'll close that work session and open up a work session on Senate Bill 1529. Kyle, are you going to give us a very brief review?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Knowing that that's impossible on this bill.
I will do my best, and then Chris will give you the extensive review if needed. Senate Bill 1529, the underlying measure, we do have the dash 5 amendment, but the underlying measure is the update to the connection to in the Internal Revenue Code. So we have the rolling reconnect, which the legislature doesn't have to act on, and then you have individual connections to the revenue code that are as of December 31st, generally, of a specific point in time. So right now, they're December 31st, 2016. We're moving that to December 31st, 2017. most of these individual provisions are definitional ties. So tying to what a 501c3 is, an Oregon statute, making sure that ties to the federal statute at the new point in time. So the vast majority of these individual components have little to no impact on Oregon's revenues. In the revenue impact statement, I did highlight some of the ongoing discussions with the Oregon's 529 program. Again, those discussions are certainly fluid. There was changes made at the federal level that could impact Oregon. However, there's a balancing act with Oregon's constitution that may limit those. So right now, we're looking at a minimal impact on that as well. That's based upon the current consensus on the legal components. But again, I wanted to just flag that as one of the particular point in time changes that could have some impacts, but again, expect them to be minimal. And then the second component, which is in the Dash 5 amendment, and this was part of the Dash 4 you saw yesterday, with a slight wording technical change that was caught. It became the Dash 5, and this has to do with what Chris has talked about, the repatriation, and the trying to grab those dividend, the DRDs. So we have that language up there. You can see that in the revenue impact statement, the repatriation revenue, those funds going to tax haven, or going to the rainy day fund, and then also the tax haven tax credit. So trying to balance the repatriation dollars with Oregon's tax haven legislation in the past. So you know, those dollars may be one and the same, given a credit to balance out those corporations that have made tax haven payments that are now going to be repatriating those dollars. So that's in there as well. And then just as a reminder, the Dash 5, we got that posted yesterday, so it would be 8:58 is the timestamp on that for moving anything on the Dash 5. We're
rapidly approaching that time. And the review of the tax haven law will be repealed, and the credits will be what they have, those companies who have paid under that will apply to their.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenhack, Legislative Revenue Office. Yeah, Kyle and I have kind of tag-teamed some of these concepts. The bill does contain a repeal of the tax haven law effective with tax year 2017, and then provides a tax credit for taxes paid under the tax haven law for tax years 2014, 15, and 16. And the idea there is that the tax collections through the tax haven law are conceptually a subset of the taxes that would be collected under the repatriation law. So just to avoid a double tax kind of situation, corporations basically will calculate their repatriation tax, if you will, and then reduce that by the amount of tax haven tax paid for tax years 14, 15, and 16. And all of that will show up on the tax year 2017 return, which is the repatriation tax. So some of the timing is a little bit different, but that's why those tax years get rolled into a tax credit for 2017.
Questions?
Senator Bertschinger.
Chris, is that going to come as a credit, or so that will on their form? I mean, are they going to credit what they paid in 14, 15, 16? Is that how it's going to show up? Or
that Chair Haas, Senator Bertschinger, that would be my expectation right now, that the calculations would be separate. I don't know that DOR has thought technically about those tax returns exactly, so I don't want to box them into how they should do it. But conceptually, it would make sense that you had the repatriation tax, so that's clear, and then there's a tax credit. That's a separate calculation. It's helpful when these things are, when the information is provided separately on the return, just to follow through. Because
right.
Once you start getting into netting things, it can be confusing for the taxpayer as well as the administration.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Boquist.
Sure. I just want a couple things on the record, because conceptually, despite the fact I'm going to be making motions out of courtesy, and there's a couple of quirks here, and staff and I do not agree on this, and it's, but the policy, I think, we need to do something, and just for the record, you can comment to at some point, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think I'm one of the people that said, hey, I think we have a problem here. Because if there is a problem, why isn't anybody upset? And we probably need to fix something and find some administrative or way to fix it. And so I think we're really looking at procedural disagreements and how to do this stuff. But a couple things jumped out at me, and now they've really jumped out looking at that revenue forecast green up there. And that is, I guess, the first conceptual thing is that the there are several places in here. We have 3-year and 5-year time frames. Most of us that are experienced in business, and I'm looking across the back room, know that I mean that you usually have a 3-year carry forward or 3-year reach back. We've created a 5-year in a couple places here. I don't think 5 is the normal. I don't know why we have a 5. And I'm not going to agree with staff on this. I think we should have 3-year, especially looking up there. But I'm looking, would like Chris to quantify his understanding, if we pass this as is, of these funds, this $140 million up there, what is the state economist going to do on the forecast in terms of the rainy day fund? If DOR does not need to transfer this, has until 2021, which I think is too much time, how are they going to forecast this? My concern, I want to make sure whether we put it in the rainy day fund or the House comes back and says, no, we want to spend it, theoretically, that's just a hypothetical, or our own members say, before it even gets to the floor, no, we should put this in the PERS unfunded liability, like some other bills that are out there. I'm concerned about the date. What is the economist going to come in? Are they going to say, you can't spend this, or is this, you could spend this, but you just got to realize you have this debt? What do you think they're going to do? And I know you're not them, and you could say something, and Josh and Mark could say, sorry, Chris, we're not doing it that way. But what do you think, based on the language we have?
Chair Hass, Vice Chair Boquist, my expectation would be that it would show up as a transfer to the rainy day fund in the 1921 biennium. We get into some logistical issues. It does pertain to tax year 2017, so the state will be, the revenues will show up in the 17-19 biennium. The mechanics of the estimate that DOR would have to make would rely on tax returns filed by the taxpayers. So that's where, before they have enough returns that they can go through and make those estimates, will be into the 1921 biennium. So the $140 million here, my expectation is that will be an increase in the ending balance. It'll roll over into the 1921 biennium, and then it will be transferred into the rainy day fund.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator,
just for the record, I mean, this is one of the disagreements that Chris and I have, and that is that despite my badgering of the two people in the back room at DOR, I do have more confidence in them because the law that we're trying to fix, the three laws we're implementing, our law, the 2004 law, the 1986 law that we're trying to fix here, makes the change automatic. It's not optional, December 31st. 2017. Now, so there's this large block of corporations that must file by March 15th, and then there's another large block whose calendar year, whose actual year ends maybe in March, June, so on and so forth. So by the time we get the 2017 returns in, okay, and there is no here, there's no, nothing that I see, and I do need Chris's comment, nothing I see that allows them to, I guess, you know, put it off. They must pay now, or they must identify it now, though they could amend returns 3 years carried forward for this. And so I see that I'm concerned about this time frame, that we can't bind a future legislature, and sometimes we're our own worst enemies in the next legislative session. So I'm concerned about this date time group that we have here, and I think it is too long, and I think we would have accurate information, and I'd really feel much more comfortable. Though I will be honest, I have no clue how I'm going to vote on this on the floor, Mr. Chair. I would be much more comfortable hearing the state economists tell us that we're going to put this into the rainy day fund and do it in that forecast from them as we go forward. But I think there are a few technical errors or technical things that we probably ought to do different in here. And so I've said my piece. We are now, I have effectively, you know, not being able to stand around and look at everybody until 8:58 in the morning. So are you ready for a motion now?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. So, and we're doing the dash 5, are we not, Kyle? Yes. Mr. Chair, I move the A5 into 1529.
Senator Boquist moves the A5s into Senate Bill 1529. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 1529 as amended by the A5 to the floor, and I'll just make a very brief comment.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 1529 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Discussion, Senator Boquist.
I just sort of want to apologize to the chair because I'm not really in disagreement other than a few technical things here. Unfortunately, my head has been in other arenas in this building that have taken them away from here, and so I have not had an extended conversation with my caucus, and I don't think I need to tell people here why I haven't had that extended conversation with my caucus, and I'm hopeful that we'll do that before this gets to the floor. So I have no idea where we're going here. I do not disagree with the policy. I think there might be a few technical errors we need to fix, and with a little bit more time, I don't know what will happen on the floor, but I will tell you beforehand, okay?
Thank you. Further discussion? I just want to thank again the LRO staff for going to work and putting this fix together, because without this fix, there would be $100 million loss thereabouts. With this fix, there is $160 million gain going into the rainy day fund. That's a swing of $250 million. So this is one of the most important bills that we will pass this session. So, Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, again, with all the distractions that we've had, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't had a lot of time to work on this like I would like to. I have seen a lot of good things in this bill. I will be voting no today, but that doesn't mean I won't change my mind before it comes to the floor, because I will have some more time to review this.
Senator Buckley.
Mr. Chair, I do. Please give me an alibi. I do once again, because I made this plea yesterday. You know, we're at the shotgun wedding. We must do something. And there's nobody saying I oppose the wedding. And so I've reached out, just like you and I both did a very good job. And I want to compliment the chair of reaching out to all the players and say, okay, does anybody see this different than we really need to fix this? Nobody expected this. There's not a lot. Nobody's really come and said they're opposed this. And I just want to warn everybody, as the clock does slow down slightly, hopefully today, Mr. Chair, some of us are going to be going back and say, hey, we don't know of any opposition. This is a technical fix. Here's the deal. The real policy issues. Do you want to put it in the rainy day fund? Do you want to put it in PERS? And unless somebody comes and sees me, that's sort of my position. And so I would once again plead to the people out there, is if somebody sees it differently, you need to tell us, because, I mean, again, I'm almost saying we're going to vote for it in committee, but not quite.
Clerk will call the rule.
Senator Benjamin.
No, with reservation.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
No, thank you at this time.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes yes. Senate Bill 1529 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Riley, you seem to have a handle on this bill as well as anybody in this room.
Sure,
would you care
not?
Carry this?
Clear as mud. No, I get it.
Okay.
As much as anybody.
All right, thank you, sir. Senator Riley will be the carrier. And finally today, we have, I will close that work session and open up a work session on Senate Bill 1523. And it is ready to go. And we will do a review. And if the committee is willing to move that to the floor, we can do that as well. But
Mr. Chair, before I start, I wouldn't like to make a comment. I just want to point out to you that I have effectively prevented Senator Bertschinger and myself from having to carry either of these other two bills.
Yes, you have.
So.
Uh, 1523, we're in a work session.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 1523 deals with the corporate apportionment for broadcasters and how they apportion their business income. And it's been referred to as a pilot project, but just to back up and provide a little bit of history, back in the 2014 session, there was a bill that established a different apportionment method for broadcasters for 3 years, tax years 24 through 2016. Prior to that, the broadcasters apportioned their income on an audience factor, basically the number of people in Oregon watching programs as compared to the U.S. It was that audience factor. And when the broadcasters came forward in 2014, they argued that a better approach for their business model would be kind of in alignment with the market sales factor apportionment that you passed last session. Mm-hmm. to base their apportionment on their direct revenue streams. And you heard some testimony the other day from the advocates that their primary revenue stream are kind of the advertising. It isn't necessarily the people watching the show. It is the people that they sell the ad time to. Technology has, there was some conversation around the technology and how it's changed a lot over the decades. And even now with some programs with, there's what's called over the top, where you can, through certain apps, CBS All Access, HBO Now, you can actually view the programs directly. And the argument there is that the revenue source, their sources of revenue in Oregon compared to the U.S. should be their apportionment factor. And there is disagreement between industry and DOR on the interpretation of current law, and therefore some disagreement about what the revenue impact will be, which is why I had to put an indeterminate on this. There are a few court cases right now, basically between industry and DOR on the interpretation of current law. And the many of the arguments boil down to three concepts. One, what it, given Oregon statute, who is an interstate broadcaster? Whether or not a given interstate broadcaster has nexus in the state. And then thirdly, which income of an interstate broadcaster is apportionable to Oregon. So even if you agree on, yes, I am an interstate broadcaster, yes, I have nexus in Oregon, there could be a question about which income is subject to this apportionment. And given those three levels of uncertainty, the revenue impact, depending on one's perspective, could be a revenue gain, a slight revenue gain, or actually a revenue loss, depending on if you side with the Department of Revenue's arguments, broadly speaking, or the industry's arguments. So I'm sure that's as clear as mud. I don't know if that's easier than repatriation.
No, it's right up there.
1523, right? No amendments. Work session, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 1523 to the floor with the due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 1523 with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Berger?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Certainly.
Chair Hass?
Hass votes aye.
Mr. Chair, in the spirit of cooperation, I'd be happy to volunteer Senator Bertschinger to carry the bill, but if he doesn't want to do it, I'll do it.
I think you're better in the media than I am.
Yes, I'm quite quotable. That is the problem.
All right. Like a good soldier that he is, Senator Boquist will carry this bill. The bill goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Boquist will carry. All right, committee. Thank you. First week is through. We spent a month here this week.
We're on the fifth day of the fifth week of the fifth month. I want to do it mentally.
Yeah. Thank you all. We'll be back 8:30, new time, next week, Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Okay. We are adjourned.